Welcome to We Like to Watch, the podcast where we talk about all the things we've been watching over the week, from movies to TV and everything between. I'm Billy.
I'm Stu.
And this is episode 49.
Yeah.
Yes. First episode after the Sydney Film Festival.
Yes. Well, it's going to be, this is like part two of Sydney Film Festival.
Part two of Sydney Film Festival, and also talking about Transformers 5?
Maybe, because we're not allowed. It's embargoed.
Oh, until when?
Tomorrow.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Transformers 5, The Last Night, which is, the fifth movie in the franchise. It won't be the last movie in the franchise either. They've already announced another two.
I already hate it.
Yeah. I haven't seen them before, but everyone tells me it doesn't really matter.
I only marginally enjoyed number one.
I enjoyed number one.
This doesn't bode well for me.
I mean, they had some issues in it, but I overall enjoyed number one.
The only thing that can save this film is if Shia LaBeouf is in it.
He's not in it.
Yeah, well then that's it's dead to me. Because I love Shia that much.
Okay. I guess we'll talk about the rest of the films we saw, and then we will, I don't know, there's no news this week, so then we're going to go watch Transformers and then possibly talk about that and what else we've watched. I don't know, when we were last on the podcast, I think we talked about...
I Am Not Your Negro was my last.
I think we were about to go see I'm Not Your Negro.
We just saw it.
Okay, all right.
We talked about that on the last show.
Okay. I watched one more that day. Do you want to go? How many have you seen
since then?
I've seen six films. 16.
16.
Wow. Okay. Yes, Stu likes to watch more movies. Well, I watched Fantastic Woman, and that is a film from Brazil, and it was in the Berlin Film Festival, and it stars Daniela Vega, who plays the role. Daniela Vega is a post-transitioned female actress.
Okay.
She's playing the role of a waitress and singer who struggles to recover after the sudden death of her partner, long-term partner.
As in female or male partner?
Male partner.
At the time, they're transgender in the role as well, or just the actress is a transgender?
I misspoke. I haven't read up on Daniela. I'm not entirely sure if she has transitioned. Doesn't really matter. She identifies herself as a woman.
Okay.
But in the movie, she's in the middle of transitioning.
To a woman or to a man?
To a woman. From a male.
From a man. Okay.
And it's very much like dealing with her partner's ex-wife and that side of the family.
Okay.
Because she was living in her partner's, she had just moved into her partner's flat.
Okay.
So it's dealing with all that and how the police treat her, because the way he died, like he fell down the stairs while sick, sort of thing. So they're just assuming.
Not murder.
No. Okay. They're just assuming, like, you know, she did something, and they're very much treating her like a freak.
Because of the surgery stuff, or just generally?
Just because, it's in the midst of transitioning from male to female. And it's just very... I don't know. It sees the ordeal that... Sort of the ordeal that trans community kind of go through.
Okay.
Being part of the gay community, you still don't... You can't really experience... I mean, everyone experiences a certain amount of homophobia.
Yeah.
But you don't... I don't know. I don't like to say everyone's position is worse than others, but it's like a gay person doesn't have the same journey as trans person.
Or it seems it's a
Everyone.
It's a younger. They're younger along their journey.
Yeah.
They're earlier in the fight.
Yeah, and Look, I thought it was a really great film.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. You didn't get a chance to watch it.
No, but...
I'd recommend you watch it.
I noticed it popped up on a lot of, like, best of lists. Like,
yeah, it's on my...
Friends and whatnot.
It's on my best... Like, it was in my top 10 in the festival.
Of the eight films you saw, it was in
there. I saw 13. Thank you very much. I've still got a few screeners to watch as well.
Yeah,
but
true.
I'm not technically counting them as part of the festival.
Oh, no,
but I might talk about them on future episodes of the podcast when I watch them.
That still counts.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I haven't watched them yet.
No, but we'll get points for wanting to see them.
Yes.
The amount of DVDs I buy and don't, and exactly. Blu-rays and don't watch, I get points for buying them.
Yeah, look, so pretty much it's just literally starts off introducing them, then it's about the death, and then just the post afterwards. It's almost like dealing with the death of any person and dealing with that person's family, but it's just a trans person.
Did you see... I can't remember. Did you end up seeing Serious Man?
No, did not.
No, sorry, A Single Man.
Didn't get a chance to. It's on my list, though.
All right.
The director of this is by Sebastian Lelo.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's also called... I mean, the English version is A Fantastic Woman, but it's called Una Mujer Fantastica.
It's a cool name.
Yeah.
Things sound so much better in, like...
I know.
English is so boring.
I know, it is.
I caught after, so the next one I caught was Mifune, The Last Samurai.
Mm-hmm. And that's that was part of the director that's been focused on this year.
Well, yeah, because it was Kurosawa this year, so it was a focus on his main collaborator, Mifune. Mm-hmm. I didn't know really much about, like, I don't know that. I haven't seen that many Kurosawa films. Like, it feels like a massive blind spot for me.
Yeah.
I've only seen... Like, I saw the two at the festival, Yojimbo and Hidden Fortress, what we spoke about last time. I've seen Seven Samurai. I've got High and Low at home. I'm probably going to watch that tomorrow. I nearly watched it this afternoon. But the doco was... it was just a by-the-numbers sort of biopic.
Like, yeah.
He had an interesting upbringing in that, he was training pilots that were going off ultimately to be like kamikaze pilots and, a tough upbringing. Hell of a performer and real stage presence. I'll burn through a couple of quick docos I saw. Then I saw Barbecue.
Yeah.
Which was some Aussie director from South Australia. I actually saw 4 years ago, they debuted a short film at Sydney Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Based around Texas barbecue. At Dendy Keys. And I happened to be in that screening.
Yeah.
And this time, Barbecue was in the same cinema.
Mm.
That they debuted that short film, and the director was like, "Wow, this is really
Which one was this one?
Barbecue?
Because there was I mean, there was two sessions. There was one that was this the session with the barbecue after?
No, was, but I didn't go to that.
Okay.
So that was like the gourmet eats or whatever it was. So,
would have been fun to go to.
Oh, because they went to it. Like,
yeah,
but they were like, we debuted in this cinema. Like, what a small world. And I'm sitting there going, hey, wait a minute, I was in that screening. So it's like two. It was cool. It's just like they focus on 12 countries around the world, just what barbecue
different
means
barbecue
to different
styles and everything.
Well, different styles, different cultures, different products, and ultimately with the message is that we all, no matter what you cook or how you cook it, ultimately the main reason most of us eat in a group setting is to share stories and laugh and have joy. And
yeah,
it just really captured those really human experiences. Really well shot. They like basically, I think they said they had one camera and just went around the world filming all this stuff, and just it was amazing. So there, it's coming out. I think it's getting a limited cinematic release in a little while.
Mm.
So I wouldn't mind trying to catch it again.
I wouldn't mind catching it.
Yeah, it's worth seeing. Then straight after that, I saw. Abacus, Small Enough to Jail, which was about a a bank in the like a Chinese focused bank in New York. I want to say New York. So it was a bank that started with a focus of helping the Chinese community, and when the by Chinese Chinese American family, and when the global financial crisis hit in 2008, this bank was identified that a couple of their loan officers were doing some shady practices with some loan stuff, and so they charged the bank with all these fraud offences.
Yeah.
And it took 5 years. The prosecution took 5 years in total. Cost them $10 million to defend themselves.
Okay.
But they ultimately beat the charges and went on to, like, and it just sort of looked at what the bank's role was within the Chinese community.
And how was, what was it like?
Really, like, it was just interesting that, like, you know, a lot of, like, you know, a lot of the Asian community is, like, cash only and don't have receipts. And don't, and then it then takes a very interesting bank that has to, like, try and work within the community to try and give it structure. And it was really cool. So, I mean, wasn't particularly great looking doco, but it was cool little story. And it was made by Steve James, who did Hoop Dreams. I think a couple of years ago he did the Roger Ebert documentary as well. What did you catch next?
Well, how many more until...
We can jump around.
What's okay, well, the next film I saw was Call Me By Your Name.
Yes.
Which you watched as well.
I did.
Now, Call Me By Your Name is by... director Luca Guadagnino.
Spelled the usual way.
Yeah. It's a story... It's based on a novel.
Yep.
Now, it's a story of sort of a summer romance.
Yep.
Between, I think it's 18-year-old?
He's a bit younger. I think he's about 16 going on, maybe 17.
He might be 17. Yeah. Between a 17-year-old, who is the son of, like, a professor.
Yep.
At their summer home in Italy.
Yep. Gorgeous.
Yeah, in, like, the Italian Riviera.
Yeah.
And they're rich, so, you know, it's a mansion.
Yeah.
And the summer sort of staying... There's some sort of university pupil who's doing like a residency kind of thing.
Yeah.
Who is, I think, I guess, 5 years his senior, like 22, 23.
Yeah.
And it's so...
And he's played by Armie Hammer.
Yeah, so Timothy Chalamet is the playing the role of the 17-year-old, and Armie Hammer is playing the role of the 22, 23-year-old.
Yeah.
Look, it was very reminiscent of... I think I've talked about it before. I know I have talked about it before. I'm not sure if you've seen it. It's a movie called The Weeknd?
No.
I mean, that is over a weekend, and it's a, like, sort of short gay love story. But this one is sort of over, like, a whole summer period. And I don't know.
This is also a coming-of-age tale.
Yeah, coming-of-age tale as well. I don't know, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's like, I was in tears and I want to watch it again.
Yeah, it's still resonating with me.
Yeah, and I mean, it's treated very well. Like, as in, like, it's not... I'm trying to find the word for it. It's not, like, your stock standard, like, love story or anything like that. Okay.
It's not your stock standard romantic story. And it's not your stock standard... And because this will come up again,
gay romance,
in queer cinema, which I had my issues with God's Own Country.
Yeah.
So God's Own Country, I found so cliche in terms of a gay. I sound so terrible as a hetero person saying it's a gay film, but
I know what you mean.
There are boxes that get ticked.
Yeah,
and all films, there's tropes in all of them. But, yeah. This is just such a sweet story.
Yeah, it is. It's a very sweet story. And, like, the actors, I don't know, they treat, like, they're very, I don't know, it just, it's very, like, it's very touching. Everything, every part of it.
And there's so much tension. Like, you can almost smell, like, the air in this film. Mm. It's like it feels like sort of that summertime adventure.
You feel like you're there.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
It's similar to the story to the book. They've made some changes. The ending is really great, like the final shot. I don't want to talk about it much, but I don't think I've seen that type of shot much in cinema.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I have. Props to Timothée Chalamet for that particular shot. But yeah, I don't think I've ever seen an ending shot like that with credits, scenes and everything in a cinema before. In a movie before.
You haven't seen any of his films before, have you?
No. Who, Timothée or the director?
You would have seen one of his films before, the young kid. He's done a few things. Mm.
He was in Interstellar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Michael Stuhlbarg is great as the dad. Mm. I thought the actress that played
he was great.
His mum was awesome as well.
Nothing against my father, but I would love him as a dad.
No, but this was done like, maybe that's the cinematic fairy dust which is sprinkled over this film.
There's a conversation between, I don't want to spoil it, but there is a conversation in it between father and son that I think every person of the LGBTIQ community.
Well, as I said to you coming out, it's coming out porn.
Yeah,
it's the conversation with your parent every.
It's
anyone questioning their sexuality wants to have that conversation with their parents. And probably,
I'm getting shivers now, and I'm slightly.
Every parent probably wants to be able to react that way for their child as well. It goes both ways. Like, I think it just talks of this love and understanding and acceptance, no matter what's happening in your life, that your parents are your parents.
Exactly.
And I loved throughout this film where, like, the parents could tell that the son was struggling with certain things.
Yeah.
And I just love that occasionally...
They didn't want to push him or
anything I love that... And I, you know, if I ever go on to become a parent one, like, I just love that idea that the dad kept saying, you know I'm here.
Yeah. You know I'm here. You know
I'm here if you need anything.
Exactly.
Like, you can talk to me. And he wasn't demanding, and the mum wasn't demanding and saying, we know something's up, tell us what's going on. There was just that beautiful, like, we're here. We're keeping our distance, but we're here. Also, it was set in 1983, which was I know it's probably from the book, but I liked that it was a great setting because, I mean, we're in Italy anyway, so it wasn't sort of the hustle and bustle. Like, we're into the countryside, so it's not the hustle and bustle.
No.
But it was everyone getting on their bikes and having adventure, and there was no technology, and there was no distractions. It was just
email.
No, a lot of people just reading books and skinny dipping and having sex with men and women. It was, why not? One of my films of the festival. Mm. That was a hell of a film. I kept thinking, look, I'm not gay, but Armie Hammer.
Armie Hammer. Whoa.
I'm not a.
The next film I saw. We were just mentioning it, is God's Own Country.
Yeah.
Now, to me, I gave it 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, I really enjoyed it coming out of the film, but then thinking about it, there were some things that annoyed me about it, but it wasn't overly, like what you and TJ kind of said about ticking the boxes type thing. Some stuff felt forced, maybe at the beginning.
There seemed no sexual chemistry between the two guys.
Yeah.
And there seemed to be no tension and no reason why it would explode into a full-on I need to fuck you relationship right now.
Yeah, okay. So basically what it is, it's set in
Yorkshire,
like
the West Country.
West Country. This family, this kid, I don't know how old, but 20s.
Yeah, he's early 20s.
Yeah, early 20s. He lives on a farm with his parents.
Yeah. Oh, although it doesn't really say... It's his dad and his grandmother.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's his dad and his grandma or
yeah, it was,
his grandparents, and he just calls them his
mom
and dad.
No, it was his dad, because you could tell there was a big age gap between the grandmother and the dad.
Yeah, I thought so.
Because
yeah.
he kept calling her Nan. His Nan and him Dad.
Yeah.
And she was very protective of him, like a mother, of his dad.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so, and I mean, the dad is sick, and I mean...
He's had a stroke.
He's had a stroke. Yeah. Not overly, like, you can still walk around, but it's more walking around with crutches.
Yeah.
And...
Everything is dumped on this kid to basically run this farm.
Yeah, to pretty much run the farm. And they're getting someone to help out during the winter.
Yep.
2 weeks.
During the lambing season.
Yeah, a Romanian called Giorgio.
A swarthy Romanian.
Yeah, it was just like, whoa. Yes, swarthy Romanian. And, yeah, it's sort of like they have to go to a part of the farm and have to stay there for a few nights.
Yeah, because they're birthing all the lambs are getting born.
Yeah, and... It sort of not escalates, kind of, as we talked about, the sexual tension escalates from there, and it's sort of.
But it doesn't though. Like he's one of them's taking the Jorgen, the Romanian's taking a piss, and he walks up and just grabs him on the dick. And it's like,
and then it just,
and then they just roll around on the ground. I'm thinking, no, this is not like. Where did this? When we showed that the kid on the farm starts the film with a. fairly public shag in the back of a cattle yards with the most stereotypical gay bloke.
I feel like it's known that, see, I think of the film this way. I feel like the film, everyone knows he's gay. It's more that he just doesn't give a fuck, he just has sex type thing. I don't think it's hidden that he's gay.
Do you reckon that's why his dad is harsh on him then? Or...
Yeah.
Like, that's why his dad's sort of
maybe.
A bit of a bully?
Yeah, he's I think like, maybe.
And he's kind of punishing him, in a sense. Like, is that the sort of the feeling?
Yeah, I think that. That's...
Because he's got a drink... Like, he's heavily drinking. But see, that's the thing. He's drinking quite heavily.
Because
he and I didn't know
be,
if that was part of the... I don't know if that's because he was a bit repressed.
Well, that's what I thought. But then I thought back and think about it, and I was just, yeah, kind of thinking that... Part of me thinks he is gay and everyone knows about it. But
it's hard to tell because there's no scenes where he's outwardly discriminated against.
No, nothing like that.
But he runs into his friend
from uni.
She went off to uni. And she was like, I've got a guy for you.
Yeah.
Which implies that
some people know he's gay.
But I mean, it's also, it seems to get the sense it's like an old country town as well, where people, if they knew, they wouldn't necessarily talk about it in public.
Yeah, but it's like, it's after that sort of rumple in the hay, which comes sort of out of nowhere, which I agree.
Yeah.
From there on, it becomes a bit of...
Yeah, it just becomes a love story.
Yeah, I know, but what I'm saying, I enjoyed it because of the love story that it was after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're gonna disagree.
I thought that the stuff, like all the stuff, was done
afterwards,
really well.
Yeah, really well.
I just didn't buy that chunk of why they would actually
hook up initially.
Yeah.
No, I get it, because I mean it didn't show anything about Yorigo being gay or anything
even
like that.
Even like giving any secret handshakes or a wink or a look or...
Yeah,
a,
it's mentioned that he had to leave Romania. That's it.
Yeah.
And he had to leave his farm.
It was very vague.
Yeah. But look, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I want to see... I do kind of want to see it again when it comes out, when it gets a wider release.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it will.
I don't know. Oh, it might. It might end up... Maybe it might end up on Netflix.
I know Call Me By Your Name is coming out to wider release, but that's like in December or
yeah,
something, or November.
Yeah.
So who knows when this will get a wider release.
I mean, and everyone's going to call this the sort of...
But the thing
we
like,
joke like the broke back.
Yeah,
of, like,
I joked that
farming.
Afterwards, but then I kind of regretted it after, because even you were saying, and TJ was, and like a few other people have said, like, they've heard it called the British sheep version of Brokeback Mountain, but it's very different, because that film, it's very... But bro- like, it's hidden.
But Brokeback is really dealing with the issue of being repressed,
whereas this isn't. It's
and
very
this is
much
like... I'm fucking who I like, and, you know, yeah. like, I'm doing... And it just...
And I guess also Brokeback is of a different time as well.
And in a very...
Much harsher.
Well, in and a very macho world, because these guys don't aren't having any contact with, like... Like, if they were having contact with, say, other sheep farmers, like... You know, they weren't...
Nothing's mentioned.
There's only really one scene in this where there's the old guy, the guy at the bar flicking water on Jürgen.
Yeah.
And you don't know if he's doing that because he's Romanian
or
because he's gay.
Yeah, yeah.
But the sense I got was he's doing it because he's Romanian.
Like, yeah, I thought that as well.
Do you call him a gypsy or something?
Yeah,
or
a gypsy.
Yeah, so it's like, that's not a gay thing.
No.
Well, yeah. So it was... Yeah. Like, I didn't... I wasn't bored in it. I was just like... I sort of sat there, as I do in every, like, if it was a straight romance or a straight action film, I'd be like, wait a minute, why did you jump from there to there? Like, that, just that one little link in the chain, I just didn't get...
No, I get it.
It would have worked the other way around if Jürgen made the move on him.
Him first.
Yeah, like, if he had a note or something, or, because, so I caught, Body and Soul, mm-hmm. on Body and Soul, the one that ended up being that won the festival.
Yeah.
You didn't catch it, did you?
No, I did not.
Interesting. Interesting film. It won also top prize at Berlin this year. Mm. Set in an abattoir. I think.
Yeah.
I have to look it up. I'm pretty sure it's. It could be in Germany. Languages and places have just like. Washed over me because it doesn't really matter. Set in an abattoir, there's an older bloke who's the finance manager of the abattoir. He's got a his left arm doesn't work. It's like he's had a stroke and he literally has to like move it round. An inspector who looks at the carcasses starts working at the abattoir, and she's. Chronically, like, has Asperger's, almost, like autism, probably to the point that she's like got Asperger's.
Yeah.
And they start up this sort of romance of sorts. He's very recluse and reserved. He shuts out everyone from his life, and she basically can't communicate with anyone.
Yeah.
And being an abattoir, they have like mating powder, which they give to bulls to help in like mating,
to
stimulate them. Some powder gets stolen from the abattoir, so the police come in and they say, "Do you know who would have done it? Because it was probably an inside job."
Yeah.
And they're like, "Well," they bring in this psychologist. To give everyone a questionnaire to see if they can identify a suspect.
Yeah.
One of the questions she asks them is that to describe their dream from the night before.
Okay.
And the film opens on this gorgeous snowy outlook, and there are these two deer walking around. And she asks this guy, like the finance guy, what did you dream about? And he dreamed about these two deer walking around.
Yeah.
Then the woman comes in and she's like, "What did you dream about last night?" She's like, "Oh, I dreamed about these two deer." And it worked out that these two were actually sharing the same dreams.
Okay. Interesting.
And it sort of goes from there. Sort of, it's...
Interesting. Is it worthy of winning the festival? In your opinion? Like, out of all the films you saw?
I would have preferred Call Me By Your Name,
Joanne.
Happy End, or I'm Not Your Negro. Okay. I know I'm Not Your Negro probably wasn't a part of the official competition.
Oh, really?
No, there's only like 10 films that are part of the... You can look them up. Like, what ones were. I think I missed a couple. I caught a fair few of them. I think Call Me By Your Name was probably had more impact. On Body and Soul was a very interesting film, though. Like, it was very good.
Do you reckon it'd get a wider release?
I doubt it. I think it's just too...
Arty?
No, well, I think they're all arty, but I think I think it's such a specific market. There's no real names that, like, there's not many international stars that I think could. Maybe the fact that it's won, like, you know, but we've seen in the years gone by things that have won Sydney Film Festival don't get a release later on.
Yeah.
So, might end up at somewhere like Golden Age, might pick it up.
Okay.
I have
seen the movie The Party.
Yes.
Directed by Sally Porter. Now, what it is, it's a black and white film. It's more like not your regular black and white film. Like, it's all in grey tones, kind of, mm-hmm. like black and white. And it's a couple. They're having a party because the wife has been elevated to a role in a political party, like a high position.
Yep.
Like a position of like health or something, health minister. And like she's getting ready, cooking and everything, and the husband is just sitting in the room, in the lounge room, acting very weird, almost like he's sort of sick or something, very quiet, and he's just playing music and stuff. And their friends start coming over. It ends up being about, there were three other couples invited. And they all start to come over slowly, and it's like news is delivered, like you slowly find out that the husband is sick. Like, it's not a shock or anything, but it's like deathly sick, and it's dealing with that.
Okay.
And it's sort of the fallout. It's just, I don't know, it was enjoyable. It was a dark comedy. It doesn't go for long. It goes for like about an hour and 10 or something.
Beautiful. Just what you want at the festival, like something nice and quick to...
Yeah, and it was very... I found it very funny in parts, but it felt like it might have been better as a theatre production.
Yeah.
It was almost like how we talked about, like how Manifesto was... An installation piece, and then got turned into a film. This feels like it was a... it was originally a play.
Yeah.
And then they said, let's do a feature film version of it as well. And it's only like set in like three rooms type thing. And yeah, it was really, I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, it's not the greatest thing I saw at the festival, but it was really good.
But still, even though it's not the best, can still be a well executed
I mean, some people didn't like it, I know. Like, they thought some of the stuff was telegraphed a bit.
Sure.
But I didn't find it.
But don't you find like everything, like, you watch that many films in that short of time, you can't,
it's not going to appeal to everyone.
You've got to switch. I think that's sometimes a lazy criticism to go, oh, I knew where it was going. Well,
I know where every film's going
because we've seen everything before.
Yeah, because my brain can't help it. My brain sometimes can't help but, like, oh, where's this going?
Yeah, exactly.
I always do that.
But sometimes you want, like, but to say, oh, I saw where it was going, it's like, well,
the thing is, I still get
surprised.
Because
it's an hour and a half long, it's got to go somewhere. The good guys have got to win, or the bad, like, you know, the bad guy's got to die.
Well,
like, it's not.
Well, yeah, but that's the other thing. It's like, I get surprised even if I'm right or wrong.
Yeah.
Where in my brain, oh, where's it going? Like, I mean, a few people gave it like two and a half. I gave it about three.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. But yeah.
One of the most emotional films I saw, which I didn't, maybe it was because it was near the end. That knocked me around a lot, was called The Farthest.
Yes.
And it was a documentary about the Voyager program back in the 70s. Sending out
Is it the one sending out signals?
Well, it was out taking photos of Saturn, Uranus. I nearly tweeted that afterwards. I don't know if that's something within the, like, in the scientific community, like, I say Uranus.
Yeah.
But everyone,
I say Uranus as well.
Yeah, but everyone in the know is like Uranus.
Oh, wow, okay.
So it was like,
it sounds like urine.
Yeah. Saturn, Jupiter, Uranus, and one other. There were four planets that took photos of. But it was just this really touching story about, like, this thing that we launched is still going.
It's still transmitting back.
In 2012, it went past, like, it broke the bubble of the influence that the sun has in our galaxy. Like, to think of something that these people crafted, and they're still alive, and launched, and it's just still going like a little troop. It just puts everything that we're, all the like squabbles that we have on our Earth, like the further it gets away, we're just this blip, we're just this little light.
Yeah, I know.
It's just, oh, it was really, like, again, it was, I only saw it, this is how silly it is, I only saw it because I wanted to book something in at the State Theatre before The Beguiled so I could get a good seat, and I nearly skipped it. I walked into it, and then I sat down, and, geez, I was blown away by it. Like, I just found it, like, talking, it was Talking Heads slash stock footage, and sort of just shots of nature, and it just was a really touching, delightful experience.
Okay,
that led me into The Beguiled, which is Sofia.
Yes, I was about to ask you about Coppola's, that. How was that?
It's good.
I skipped it because
it's out soon. It's out in a month.
That's why, and I wanted to see more films that weren't going to be out for a while.
It's good. I'm getting to a point with Sofia Coppola where I'm not sure if I like her as a filmmaker or if I just like Lost in Translation and Somewhere. Because everything else I'm kind
of
like...
Yeah, I found a lot of people like...
Virgin Suicides is film, fine. I didn't see Bling Ring. I didn't rate... I stopped watching Marie Antoinette halfway through because I was just bored by it.
Yeah, I heard like a few people say like this film is literally like this and this and this. Yeah. Yeah.
It's... So it's set in like... During the Civil War, Colin Farrell plays a northern fighter who's injured and stumbles onto like a southern plantation, meets this young girl. She takes him back to a house which is run by
Nicole Kidman.
Kirsten Dunst is there. Elle Fanning's there. Agoras Rice, the girl, young girl from The Nice Guys, the Aussie actress. Mm-hmm. She's one of the girls too, and there's a couple of other girls. And he's been shot in the leg, so...
And they're nursing him back to health.
They nurse him back to health, and it's all sort of...
Sexual tension?
Well, there is, well, in a tension that, for no reason, the girls start dressing up a bit and putting on, like, makeup and jewellery, and they all start calling each other, and so it's a bit of a comedy to start with. Then some darker stuff happens, and it sort of then descends into something else. I enjoyed it. It's a remake, so I wouldn't mind going back and watching the original.
Clint Eastwood.
I think so. Yeah. Apparently, everyone says it's very different.
Yeah.
Sorry. So, yeah, I enjoyed it, but I wasn't like
blown away.
No, but it's short. It's only like 90 minutes. So
which it was long.
It had the like, looking at it, it had the like potential to blow out.
I checked it out then. I thought it was going to be a long film.
No.
Well, I saw. Film Patty Cakes.
Yep.
And it's directed by Jeremy Jasper and stars Danielle McDonald, who is an Australian actress, and I think this is one of her first films. Right. And it's quite the breakout film for her.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting a lot of praise, and rightly so. It was a good film. Now, it's about her name is Patricia Dombrowski. A.K.A. Killer P, A.K.A. Patty Cakes, and she's from Jersey, and she's an aspiring rapper.
Yeah.
So it's almost like very much has essences of 8 Mile.
Is she rapping? Is it like the rap battles, or is it just her?
There is some rap battles in it.
Yeah.
But she has a rap battle, but then there's also rap contest in it. But it's nothing like. Going a crescendo to that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's not like the boxing film. That
and I mean, she just wants to. She wants to get out of Jersey.
Yeah. Okay.
But the thing is, like, they're making up that she is quite a good rapper. She's got her poetry is amazing.
Is it good?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was fun to watch. But it's kind of it does feel a bit like those you've seen this type of film before.
Yeah.
But it was very good.
Set now, modern day.
Yeah, set in modern day.
Yeah.
Good cast.
Anyone else of note in it, or is it all sort of?
There is someone who plays a grandma, and her mother. Like a person who plays a grandma and her mother. Bridget Everett is in it. I think her name's Kathy Moriarty.
I know that name.
Yeah, but Yeah, I've seen, like, the person who plays her grandma, I've seen her before.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. I enjoyed it. I mean, I'd recommend to watch it when it comes out. But I've heard... I know someone who watched it and the movie version of Tupac's Life.
All Eyes on Me.
Yeah, I've heard people saying that they didn't enjoy Tupac's film.
I watched All Eyes on Me.
Did you like him?
No.
I heard people say they enjoyed Patty Cakes more than that film.
That wouldn't be hard.
Yeah, I've heard it's not the greatest film. No, All Eyes on Me.
I caught it To Kill Time the other day.
At the drive-in?
No, here. Before.
It's very strange. They had, like, through various parts of Australia, a preview screening of
at
it.
At drive-thrus, yeah.
At drive-thrus.
But I think because they wanted... Well, they wanted... I can see exactly where the marketing went. It said, we need to give this an urban flavour. So we've got drive-thrus and food trucks and there was graffiti shows. So it was like...
Oh, God.
Gangsta. Yeah, I saw it. It was...
I can tell you, the drive-in that they had it at in Sydney is not very...
Blacked down.
Yeah.
Did you catch... Straight Out of Compton?
No.
About NWA? From last year or 2 years ago? Yeah, last year, I think. Maybe the year before.
I mean, this was more comedy.
What?
This, like...
Patty Cakes. Oh, I'm saying All Eyes on Me. It was trying to sort of... It was playing in the same sort of realm that... Like, same era that sort of NWA was, because a Tupac was in Straight Out of Compton. I don't think it was the same actor. But, yeah, I didn't... It was all right. It just sort of went... really heavy-handed on, like, something's happening in his life, and then it would cut to, like, let's sing this song about what's happening, and it just didn't, like, the guy that plays Tupac was pretty good, like, he looked a bit like Tupac, but Tupac was such a charismatic dude that it's so hard to, like, pull it off. It's you know, Straight Out of Compton was lucky because the guy playing Ice Cube was actually Ice Cube's son,
yeah.
The guy from Ingrid Goes West,
yeah.
So it's like they literally could pull it off,
yeah.
I wasn't really wowed by it. What? So that's your last? Was that your last?
No, last one was Blade of the Immortal.
Ah, yes.
Takeshi Miike's 100th film.
Yep. Have you seen 13 Assassins?
I think I might have. I can't remember if I have. But yeah, so basically, it's a movie version of the manga. I have not read the manga.
Yeah.
The manga comic. But I've heard it's a good representation of it because that went for a while.
What is it? Is it a samurai film?
So, yeah, it is a bit of a samurai film. There's a warrior and he's sort of cursed with immortality.
Yeah.
And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So he has to, like, defeat, like, this sort of samurai clan.
Purge the land of them kind of thing?
No, sort of because this girl... it's the samurai clan that's trying to destroy other schools of samurai to be the best samurai.
Okay.
And
so it's like feudal Japan kind of thing, like warring clans.
And they've also, like, there's this girl who survives her family being killed by them, and she finds this guy and wants to hire him as her bodyguard and also, like, to help her get her revenge.
Sure.
There's a bit of that. It's really good. I really enjoyed it.
Violent as all hell, though.
Yes, violent
Miike
as all
does.
Hell. Yeah, and bloody as all hell as well.
He does. You think Tarantino does blood? This man does.
It was really good. At from people who have read the book, they've said it was a good representation of the book as well. I mean,
and
would have been better.
Sold out crowd for you? Cause
no, I mean, I watched the second session, the second screening
busy
of it
though.
In the festival. But it was busy, yeah.
So
everyone enjoyed it.
They're good to see. Those films are great to see with a big audience when you give, like, especially
good.
When the blood and guts starts.
Yeah. But yeah.
Well, my final one, the final thing I'll touch on, was Okja.
Yes. What did you think?
It's all right. Like, it's,
yeah, I've heard that. I've heard mixed.
Like, it's good, not great.
I've heard lots of people said they're going to be turning to vegetarianism after it.
Yeah, so it's a company that is sort of a company that's like a food company sets up a thing where they get these super pigs and they send 26 of them out into... like, to different farms around the world, and in 10 years' time, they're going to run a competition to see which is the best super pig. to go into into production, and they're massive. They're like a hip. It's like a pig mixed with a hippopotamus. Mm. This one focuses on Okja, who is given to this
little girl.
Her grandfather is raising it. Mm. He's a farmer in these hills in South Korea, and she basically has a relationship with Okja. So, and they've got like they've got a really close bond.
Was it like a mental bond or something?
No, they just.
See, that's what I thought.
No, like the trailer. No, yeah, the trailer. I thought it was going to be that there was some kind of like
psychic bond.
Well, or human splicing.
Yeah, I thought that as well.
I thought Okja was going to work out that all along it was a human, and it had been and it's not that. So. Mm. Basically, when the 10 years comes, the company comes to take the pig back.
I heard, and the person who claims it is
Tilda Swinton.
No. What's his name?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, wearing shorts. Well, that are very.
He's playing this.
Yeah, baby.
He's playing this washed-up, like TV vet, like vet personality, like reality TV, and he's doing this bizarre, like high-pitched voice. Like it's an. You know how we never go, like, you never get to see Gyllenhaal really, like, let loose?
Yeah, this is Gyllenhaal letting loose.
He's off the chain.
Not nice.
Which, there's a reason people don't let Gyllenhaal go off the chain, because it's a bit wacky.
Okay.
So, the company comes and tries to take Okja back to New York.
Mm.
Their little girl sort of basically chases it, gets caught up into some inner workings of the company. There's some animal liberation people at work led by Paul Dano. Mm. And it just sort of goes from there. And it's a bit of a commentary on food production, on sustainability.
Society.
Okay. Doesn't... it's very funny. It's got some decent action. It's a bit... Like, you saw Snowpiercer?
No.
Okay. I loved Snowpiercer. I saw that at... Sydney Film Festival 2 years to three maybe three years ago, I think. Maybe two, and I found that had a bit of a knife hiding in it, that he really shoved the knife in and twisted it, and you were like, oh, this doesn't have that kind of bite to it. I did have to ask myself while I was watching it though, going, if this was on Netflix, would I keep going? If I'm at home,
was it a long film?
2 hours on the nose.
Okay.
But I don't
know. I am going to watch it when it comes to Netflix.
Yeah, I don't know if I had been watching it at home, if I would have finished it. Like, if I would have just gone, I'll come back to it. But I'm bad with Netflix that way. Like, I kind of... I find it hard to sit down and just smash it through when there's so much choice.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he's got the freedom to do whatever he wants on Netflix. Because he definitely just went for it. I'm glad I caught it at the festival.
Okay.
And Bong Joon-ho, the director, was actually here and introduced the film beforehand, which was really cool to see. Mm. And one of the stars of the film was here as well.
Okay.
Overall, what would you say your top? What are your top picks? Not your top ten, but what are your?
I can tell you right now. Give me a moment. What were yours?
My film of the festival is I'm Not Your Negro, just because of how
rousing
it was for me.
Mine is 7852.
Okay, yep.
My top five is 7852, Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
Fantastic Woman.
Yeah.
I'm Not Your Negro. And Blade of the Immortal.
Mine would be I'm Not Your Negro, probably Call Me By Your Name, Happy End.
Happy End was my sixth.
Body and Soul. Yeah, and maybe 7852 as well. Mm. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I just enjoyed that much focus on that. So,
yeah.
So do we go?
All right. Well,
now endure
Transformers
2.5 hours.
God, it's
2.5 hours for the base explosion, which is about to hit, and the line is getting long.
All right, guys.
Let's go jump in.
We'll be back soon
if we're not dead.
Yeah.
Bye.
And we're back, and we've just seen Transformers 5, the last night.
Yes, and we've been
probably the last time I watch a live-action Transformers film, possibly.
I doubt that.
Yeah, true. The first one's all good, bad. You've even agreed, the first one's not as bad.
As what? As that?
Yeah.
The first one's shit. The first one that...
Compared to this? They've just gotten worse and worse.
It has no Shia LaBeouf. If this had Shia LaBeouf, I would have...
Shia LaBeouf was in this.
Oh, well...
For one brief second.
And we've been joined by Mr. Garth Franklin.
Who was suitably revolted like everybody else.
You've come to help. This is like a group therapy session. We're going to talk it out.
Hey, basic premise of the flight is...
go on.
Yeah, because Blake said to try and summarise it in 2 minutes. Okay, so basically Cybertron is coming closer to Earth, and this person called Quintessa, who is apparently Optimus Prime's creator.
So like a mother of the race.
Yeah, wants to sort of drain the Earth to revive Cybertron. And it's sort of delving into the Transformers past, apparently. There is a staff that used to belong to Quintessa, which... was given to Merlin.
Yep.
And the Knights of the Ring. Yeah, the
who
Merlin and the Knights of the Ring.
He does a good wizard.
Crazy wizard.
Well, he does good drunk, wacky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slightly Italian Merlin.
But yeah, so that's it, pretty much. Yeah. That's the premise. Yeah. I just have to stop.
And so like the
happening.
Last hour is like the remains of Cybertron trying to absorb the Earth and
stuff. Yeah, a lot of slow mo destruction, which Bay's known for. Was there any like
redeeming features?
No, I was going to say, was there? I was trying to count the
explosions. No,
the explosions and the sort of lens flares and stuff and everything.
I think you can actually. It's like when you cut a tree and you count the rings, you work out how old it is. With the bombs, you learn how far Michael Bay has lost his fucking mind. Like I have.
There were some funny parts in it, but not.
Yeah,
as much
mostly revolving around Hopkins.
Yeah.
Most of Hopkins stuff. He was like just game for it.
And these robotic butler who I don't know who he's played by.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I've heard the voice. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think he knew what film he was happy to make. Well, he was going, look, I'll give you fucking wackadoo.
Well, this is the thing we've discussed before on the in the queue for Transformers, like. He's been in some shitty films. Like, I mentioned the one with Ryan Gosling.
Fracture.
I sort of enjoyed that film. And he doesn't mind doing shit.
I think Sir Tony realises when he signs up for the fifth Transformers...
What it is.
And exactly what he's going to give it. Which is fine, because he gives it... He's the elder statesman that comes in. It's basically like what Sean Connery did for the Last Crusade.
And
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen as well. Yeah. Like, they come in and they go... I'm a senior head. I can pull the odd gag, and we're not gonna like. I'm not saying those.
And he has no bones about it. He's previously said that you know it's better than working for a living. He gets a good paycheck. It's fun.
My grandkids will go out to watch this, and they'll enjoy it. Yeah. Fair enough. One thing I don't mind about this: some of the tech, all the way through all the Transformers, the effects and the VFX of the Transformers looks cool. I still think as machines, they look and move really well.
Has friend of the show Ian mentioned the VFX to you at all?
No, he hasn't had a chance to watch it. He couldn't make it back tonight.
So the main issue has usually been one case of they don't have enough physics. They usually move way too fast. People are getting almost their head sliced off.
There was points like there was a bit where like it's in the trailer where Bumblebee's down for the count and Optimus sort of stabs a sword at him and Cade Jaeger is near him. It actually does look like a bit of really, oh shit, the sword is too close, let's digitally move his head just slightly to the left.
But the only problem I have as well, there are no set rules for what hurts like people and Transformers. Transformers will get shot to shit up and they keep going.
Well, basically, people are getting hit by cars all the time in these movies.
Or one Transformer will just shoot another one and its head will pop off. You go, why didn't you just fucking do that the whole time?
That's even in the comics. Like, sometimes it'll be like, okay,
how does he survive pretty much everything getting
cut?
Yeah,
I mean, Bumblebee effectively explodes in this.
Yeah,
and yeah. It comes
several
together
times.
Again.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
And then others, they just, like, he sliced up a head and they're all gone.
And he comes back almost like sort of Tony Stark's armor together.
Yeah.
But the crippling problem with this is just it's the plotting. It's
too much.
It's all exposition for the entire film. We're going from A to B to C, and it's just like we've got to get the thing because when we get the thing, it's going to lead us to another thing that'll lead us to another thing.
And then it's putting plots in for like the next film and whatnot. Yep.
And the problem being as well is that you have all these groups, essentially like you. We had it in Guardians, we had it in all the Marvel things, DC. You roll the marble, you get the marble set, you roll them down, and occasionally they'll clash into each other. In this, you seem to have all these like special forces chasing the heroes for the. It was one long chase scene for the entire.
And it feels like, okay, maybe not chase the Autobots, maybe try and stop the Decepticons. But no, we're going to team up with the Decepticons to chase the heroes.
It was wacky at times. Like, I literally sat back going, what is going on? Like,
friend of the show, what's his name? Harris? Is it Harris? Or
Harris Dang.
Harris Dang asked how much of the Chinese market was sort of advertised doing this. I think it was a little bit. I did see, like, a little website. Not as much as the previous one, but this one, they had a website looking at cars and whatnot.
When the destruction of the end starts, it's Hong Kong which is in the
fire. No.
First off,
fire out.
Hong Kong and Cairo.
Like, how many times does the Pyramids want to get destroyed in this franchise? It happened in the previous one.
Did it?
I think the third one.
I will never watch them. I will never. I will go to my grave.
Big out back to watching.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's a few nods to the series. Like, Quintessa is meant to be a nod to Quintessons. It's a race of Transformers. You've got the animated movie to watch, so you'll see them in that.
Which is, I think, 84 minutes as opposed to 2.5 hours.
Well, and also they mention Unicron, which it's fine. I'm not fussed about spoilers. With this film.
You can't spoil Transformers.
No, no.
They mentioned Unicron in this. They mentioned Unicron in this film, which will be in that animated film that you're going to see as well.
But there's not. It's not even a spectacle though anymore. Like, it's not. That's the problem. Like, this is. I think if we're learning anything, especially from this year, comic book things have got to start to wind back and go the other way. If you actually went to a more nuanced
scale,
like Logan, like, I'm not saying you're going to have Optimus Prime Logan version where he's like old in a forest somewhere doing something, but the fact that makes things resonate is a localized story. Like, this has got world upon world upon world. Like, we lost in this, we're to assume that about 10 million people died in the process. Yeah. They went, we've lost lives. No Americans though, or no white people. It's like, that's fine. Like,
That's like US policy.
Yeah.
And can we talk about one thing you'd like to talk about? Michael Bay's sense of humour.
Oh
my god. This feels like the sense of humour he had. What was the gym film
Pain
he
and
made?
Gain.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Pain
it
and
felt
Gain.
Like,
yeah,
the sense of humour that he had in Pain and
that
Gain.
That felt like he
every,
was
second,
at least...
every second or third word was bitch.
See, there is still. Because you've got to remember, in Michael Bay's world, it's still 1993.
Yeah.
He's still filming Bad Boys?
No, yeah. So
it's about just Bad Boys.
No, Bad Boys 2.
Everything is still in play. So everything is bitch-ass. Every woman is...
Political greatness doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. Every woman is there to be bettered. This woman, Laura Haddock, who is literally sculpted to look like Megan Fox.
Yeah, and I mean, everything Kate said to her, you're just wearing a stripper outfit. It's like, okay.
Which made no sense as well, because she went the scene before... She was in just regular clothes, and she changed into a like formal black
dress,
which was not really revealing or anything like that. But yeah, it's just this idea that the women are.
Objects.
He gives them a bit of moxie, but that's after they've proven that guys want to like every guy wants to bang them. Like, they had the little Mexican girl, the first boys that stumble across her go, "You got a boyfriend? You're kind of hot." Like, and she's like, "I'm trying to
save
your
life." You
have a
big heart.
Okay, like. Can I?
Fuck? You got a big heart. Like, I didn't even get where that was going. Like, fuck.
It's weird. So he's like, I think he's toned down some of the, like, you know, I know the last ones. Which one was it? Number three or four that had the ruster the Ruster Transformers that they toned them down. It was a bit Jar Jar Binks style. Like, it was a bit too.
And they're chugging like the token Mark Wahlberg shirtless scene just to like play the others about to say
he's still got the magic.
The one thing I have said, like, and a few friends of mine have, and other people I know online, like, that are fans of the Transformers, the comics, because I've mentioned on the podcast and the other podcast, and the IDW comics are great, is the movies need to be less about the humans and more about the actual Transformers. Like, you'll see in this, there are humans in the animated movie that you watch. But you can tell a story with Transformers. Just because they're like robots doesn't mean it's not going to be an enjoyable film.
Yeah.
Like, you can have like a human element in it, but like you can do...
Pixar's exactly. Proven that inanimate objects are more interesting.
I don't understand why they haven't made a film which is just the Transformers itself.
Well, then that would be technically... You could do that as a completely animated film.
Yeah.
That's the obvious way to do it. I mean, the trouble with that is you have the problem here that you have with The Great Wall. Great Wall was a film that was actually a Chinese film with three American actors sort of almost blue screened in and like to put points. The same thing happens here with the humans and the robots. So you basically have a big giant robot action movie.
Mm.
And then there's a couple of scenes with the humans that they just put in, and that's like a whole different movie, and they kind of wedge them together.
And what screws up in this is you then, for framing and whatnot, you have to adjust the scale of like I always saw Optimus Prime as being massive. Mm. But in this, he's almost like, in some shots, almost just like an eyeline by Wahlberg. And you go, hang on, how, like from one scene you're like a big robot will appear and one of them goes, oh, I don't have enough ammo to take him out. And then cut to the next scene, he is taking everyone. And you're like, oh, I'm not looking for realism. I'm looking for a consistency in the scale.
Oh, but Cybertron was the worst of that.
Yeah.
It was like the size of a planet, and then it's like, it just takes out one little hill in the UK.
Exactly, yeah. Like, just knocks the edge off.
It's like, what's it is the scale of this planet? I don't quite get it.
And even the fight sequences for when Unicron is sort of coming out of Earth or up underneath it, when they're fighting on it, like Mark Wahlberg's sliding off, and you go, that's it, game over, man. You are, like, I know it's wackadoo, and that's the whole point. But then that's when you just check out straight away.
Yeah, there's no,
like
there's no reality,
it's almost the uncanny valley of that scale.
Can we talk about the whole throwing Vanessa at the spear?
The weightlessness thing?
The weightlessness and, like, what is it, tag team? Like, throwing it to one person, then to another, and then throwing her at the spear.
Spatial dynamics.
And what's his name? The nerd at NASA?
Tony Halvin.
Tony Halvin, it's just... Because I know he can be over the top, but holy shit, this character was over the top.
That's he's the type of person that Bay probably shoved in a locker when he was in high school. Like, he was the geek that was Bay's like, I love him. He's a nerd. We need his nerdy, over the top, like, physics, everyone, maths.
Bay has very specific ideas of people.
Yeah.
There are geeks, there are jocks.
And Navy SEALs.
There are babes. Yeah. And there are old farts who can be character actors. And that's about it.
And good military folk.
Yeah. I mean, look at all of, like, Shia LaBeouf's girlfriends in this film. Like, in the film series. They've all been, like, essentially Baywatch girls.
Oh, but that's
me. Yeah, but that's the same as the whole series. Look at the first one. You had Rachel Palmer, was it? And, like, as the hot female blonde geek.
Yeah.
And then all the other geeks were just like sort of regular kind of geeks around. That's Bay Cars.
And that's been him from Tia Leone onwards. But it's just horrible. Like, it was actually numbing to watch after a while. Because I was like...
I kept looking... You saw me. I kept looking at my phone to see how long was left.
Yeah.
I leaned over and I go, 20 minutes left. And then it was for somehow...
And it felt longer.
It felt longer than 20 minutes. But it was 20 minutes.
And it just...
It was a 2.5 hour film that felt 5.
And that's... It's the problem that Marvel's... Marvel, I think, is in the best position at the moment to actually lose... To start... To lose people of interest moving forward,
like I thought, and they already have in some ways.
Yeah, like I think, I mean, like they lost Quicksilver, but now when they start to knock off, like I think War Machine. I thought War Machine should have gone in Civil War. Mm. Same in this, they won't sacrifice really a proper Transformer an actor, because there's not many actors. Who have we got left? We've got the Navy, the head of the Navy SEAL. He's been there the whole time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, he missed one, I think,
Yeah, there's been a Decepticon.
Yeah.
The cop car. That's been every single one.
So they can't kill Bumblebee.
Optimus, and Megatron keeps coming back.
Megatron keeps coming back. Optimus Prime goes good, bad, evil, disappears, comes back.
I'm disappointed.
And then all the rest are like pretty much up for grabs.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed Starscream was dead. That annoyed me.
Yeah.
Like,
but they can't, and now they've boxed in that you go, right, there's no tension that we're going to lose anyone.
Yeah.
So what have we got?
And Cybertron is now in Earth's orbit, so it's like, what do we do here?
But I'm interested to see what this does business-wise, because it's just... Paramount are having a shit time as a company.
This is their only real big problem.
Baywatch was a flop. They've had Ben-Hur, which was lost a bucket load of cash.
Well, that was like, mostly MGM, yeah.
Yeah, and they've lost. They've had a lot of big...
Even the ones that were normally their cash cows, like Star Trek, underperformed.
Yeah.
So they're really... I didn't realise the
recent Star Trek. Does that mean... Did that stop... Are they not going to do the next one, or is that put a...
It's put things on hold a little bit.
Well, they have to see how the TV show goes.
That has no play on Paramount. CBS owns that.
Yeah.
And CBS, the whole thing is Paramount's in sort of stalling while CBS may buy it. So that's the whole.
Okay.
But it's yeah. So and
they need hits to be basically
viable. Or
if they get a hit, they become like a hot model, so that Michael Bay, who's like CBS, can buy it.
But I just can't. I know we keep saying that. I just want to know if market tastes have turned. It's going to be the international market that keeps this going.
Oh, yeah. The domestic market, this whole...
Surely it's got to...
Because they just had the US summer, and the domestic market is supposed to be compressed for everyone. No one's seeing anything.
It's like Warcraft. They're going to make a sequel to that just because of the...
Maybe
because of the Chinese probably market. Not.
But even that was only about $350 million in China. Like, it wasn't...
Yeah.
That's not... You've got to make sort of... You've got to be like almost billion plus with these now. But the problem...
Pacific Rim sequel will be a test of that.
Even Wonder Woman was like, everyone's like, yeah, it's made big money, but it's only sitting at 570. Even, I think, what is Suicide Squad tapped out at about 780, I think, or maybe higher.
But except Wonder Woman's still got a long way to go.
It'll have a long multiplier, but there's still some stuff on the horizon, because this will land soon, that'll start to eat into its...
Wonder Woman's heading towards probably about an 800, it'll be about Suicide Squad, The difference is it gets good reviews versus...
But even that, that's not good. I wonder if this is enough to roll, like... To get that multiplier up to...
They've already announced two more after this. The next one is a Bumblebee one. And then after that it'll be...
They want to do Bumblebee as Iron Giant.
See, that could
that
work.
That could work.
If you localise it, he's
the only Transformer in the movie. It's going to be 1980s, and it's going to be like a sort of touching, more emotional story.
That
actually sounds more...
I'd love to see War Transformers. Like the one that we... The flashback we kind of saw in the trailer and in the film.
Well, you could do that with for the scale would be small, the budget would be smaller, surely, for that. Like I mean they'll beat for beat rip off the Iron Giant, but there'll be a bit of fear, there'll be some red eyes and
in order to survive it needs to move away from Michael Bay.
Is Bay signed up for the next few?
No, he's done. He says he's out. Wahlberg says he's out.
I thought
Wahlberg had one more.
No, Wahlberg says he's out. He's gone.
I just don't see. There's just his aesthetic. I just can't see it working anymore.
No,
he's
milked it way past the point of like saying any sort of common sense.
Two times now, and he's come back.
Yeah,
but it's almost like how it's like Snyder. Like I don't think they're known. Like if you could leave potentially visuals with them. I mean, they never. They're big swinging dicks. They're never going to step back like that. They can't.
Well, certainly not now, because the whole thing, this was the great experiment for them.
Yeah.
They assembled this writer's room. They got a whole bunch of top talent and producers, Spielberg, all in the room. And they basically come up with a plan for the franchise.
And
the
they were
going to
roll
years.
This into Mask and all that, weren't they?
Yeah.
Was that these
yeah.
guys?
Oh,
that
no, that's right.
That's happened
in the comics
yeah.
with IDW. Like no, G.I. Joe, Mask, and all that.
Aren't the Transformers in that, right? It's the same company,
yeah, but that was a separate. G.I. Joe and Mask are going to be merged together, yeah.
Which would work.
Yeah. But this was the first sort of result of the experiment. So the question was how it was going to do, and that's why Bay came back.
And I just
was it successful? No.
No.
I don't think it's too far away from what he was producing before.
No.
Like,
no.
It's over-plotted.
They're just doing some retconning.
Melodrama.
Yeah, it feels like a movie and a half.
Too much. And just all this, like, people coming with important messages to say, come and follow me to this next thing, to the next thing. It's not organic at all. I just...
It needed a lot trimmed off.
But even that, you just... yeah, you could just hack out whole heaps of, but I don't know, I think this is probably more for the international market that doesn't care about longer films, where it's value for money more, like they go overseas, because all the films seem to do well overseas going, like Asia loves the longer epic, sort of the grandeur of it, and maybe we're just too cynical because we've seen it way too many times. But I got confused a few times going, what are we doing?
Which Transformer is still alive? Like, I can't tell.
Yeah, and who's like, I thought at one time when they formed that mega, like, Decepticon, I thought Megatron was in the middle of that.
I thought that was
formed around him.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like. Because it looked like a red face. And then...
I didn't like Megatron's, like, robot.
It's a weird look.
It's a weird look for now.
And wasn't it Hugo Weaving originally?
But I don't know who's doing it.
He said... But that was when Hugo Weaving was saying no to...
pretty much everything.
Yeah. Like, he said... That was when around the time when he said no to the Red Skull as well, I think.
Yeah.
The second one.
Yeah, it's fair. Yeah, but he had at least... He's got a better voice for it. And I didn't notice... Was it John Goodman as the ship?
Yes. Yeah,
and Ray Winston? Was he the green one?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Like,
Goodman certainly, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's Goodman's second film, as Transformer.
And even that, a lot of their dialogue was incoherent.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it was just the sound presentation we had or my hearing, but a lot of it is just that sort of that low... Like, Goodman's voice is like that at the best of times, but he's just got a...
I just want to know if he did it in mocap, that way we can see the footage. Him and Tyus doing cartwheels. Be more fun than that film.
And even like, they couldn't even make the little, like, this is what in the day and age of like BB-8 and K2SO, they couldn't even really make the little Mexican one lovable enough, the little blue one. You couldn't even make that interesting, like your designers couldn't even come up with
at least he doesn't have those robots talking jive.
No, yeah. catch you fool. Oh no, so
Well, that's been us. Episode 15X.
What are you giving that out of 5?
I don't know. Not a 3.
Really? I thought you would have gone. I'm like half a. I'm 1 star, and that's for the Hopkins Butler, right, and Robot Butler, namely the musical scene, the organ. Playing the organ and doing the choir.
That was funny.
That was good. Yeah. That's how you do exposition. It's fun.
Yeah. The interactions between him and the butler were the best.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Because it was like sort of John Cleese and Manuel from Falling Down.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. But it's just bizarre. And Vivian's mum and the mother's girlfriend sitting around.
The horny mother. See what it leads to their daughter.
Horny mother's
get roughly fucked by some American stranger.
Mark Wahlberg, just because he's got wooden hands and a chiseled physique. Okay. And then drinking scotch while, that's Bay. That's Bay's sense of humour.
Well, yeah, in Bay's world, everyone's like a dirty little...
Yeah,
and like Wahlberg having his shirt up and the fake, it's nice to look at. But anyway, that's his whole thing. Oh, to increase sexual tension between the two of them.
Of course.
I was waiting for her, though. She was in a white top. I was waiting for her to get dunked in the water. But luckily, then she put on the jumper, and I was like, "Oh, well done, Michael. Well done. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're showing growth as a person,
as a human."
But yeah, there's not a lot redeeming about it at all. Like, it's just I feel I'm just
unclean.
I'm just thinking of all the classic cinema that I haven't watched.
Yeah.
But I've dedicated 2.5 hours to that.
Excellent.
More because of recording the conversation and coming in. So. All up, this investment is way too much in my life.
Yes, it is.
All right.
I think we're done.
All right.
Okay. All right. Bye. We'll be back next week.
Ciao.
See ya.